Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live from the Mad Dog Dynasty League headquarters in Maguanago, Wisconsin. Fat Guy with a Phone Productions proudly presents another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. It's time to enter our obsession, the doghouse. I'm your host, the commissioner of the Mad Dog Dynasty League, and aforementioned Fat Guy with a Phone himself, Rick Goreski. We're getting the band back together tonight to talk about our obsession, the Mad Dog Dynasty League. Yet another show in our 2016 off-season moves series. We're going team by team, division by division, reviewing the 2016 off-season. One team down in the red last night as we saw Scott Phillips' TDs. Before I tell you what we have in store for you on today's show, it's time to add the we to me. Time to introduce my co-hosts for today's show, the guys that make this worth listening to. First up, he's so on point that you'd think he's the heir to the Bic Pen fortune. He shops at Sam's but buys at Meijer's. Please welcome the owner of the Malicious Minds, Tom Buckles. Good to have you with us, Tom.
Yep, wing it. Wing it. Do it.
Yeah, right. Sorry, man. For everybody that's listening, this show came in at the wire here because I got home very late. I guess I'll say it out loud. Mama Goreski, my mom had a knee surgery, and I stopped up at the hospital on the way home from work to visit her and see how she was doing. And by the time I got home, you know, the rest is history, as they say. I did manage to meet the 10 o'clock deadline, guys, though. And I say guys because next up, like those guys from the NBA at the Olympics, he once accidentally walked into a brothel in Rio. He's the tone setter, the owner of the Stone Form Pallies, Steve Wellman. Thanks for joining us tonight,
honestly,
Steve.
Winging
it with the rest of us. What's that?
I honestly thought it was a 7-Eleven.
Gentlemen,
were you held up at gunpoint?
Yeah, were you held up, Steve? Or were you the
no
one
comment.
Doing the stick up? That's got Monty Python written all over it. Which actually now I'm going to talk about. What was that show, The History of the World? The one where they had the dude was trying to hide out as one of the gimps or whatever, and then he had the girl dancing around him, and then the feather came up. Gregory Coleman,
yeah,
that's his name.
Gregory Hines.
Gregory Hines, yes.
Yes, and it was History of the World Part 1, and that was a Mel Brooks production.
Mel Brooks, thank you, sir. Yes, getting me on track here. But I was thinking about that just earlier today, how funny that scene was. And anyway, gentlemen, it's time to get
He's
crazy.
He's a eunuch. He's a
crazy
eunuch.
As in Crazy 7, a eunuch, that's what I was trying to remember. My team is the focus of today's show, Crazy 7. You know the drill. As quickly as I can, I am going to recap Crazy's moves, the signings, cuts, taxi promotions, trades. Then we can talk about how these moves impacted the franchise. Are we ready? Should we do it? Do it.
Do it.
Come on, Tom.
Do it.
There you go. Now we can officially do this. So, Crazy 7. I like to tell everybody about how the teams did the year prior before we do this so that you get a little bit of a before-after taste of things. flavor. To set things off, quarterback, the league average was 394 points. Crazy finished last at quarterback in the red division with 401 points, above league average, but last in the red division. At offensive flex, league average was 929 in 2015. Crazy finished third in the red division with 957 points. That's tied with Ipswich United for fourth best in the league, but again, only good enough for third in the red. Tight end, league average was 197. Crazy finished below the league average with 183 points at tight end, which was good for, anybody want to take a guess, third best in the red division. Unlike TDs, where you're asking how the hell didn't this team make the playoffs, at this point you might be wondering how the hell this team has won the division and made the playoffs. At place kicker, Crazy's 128 points was dead on the league average of 128. That was good enough for second in the red. Here's where things start to change. Defensive line saw Crazy start to separate themselves, leading the red division by scoring an amazing league-high 498 points. The league average was 340, so 498 is nuts. Having J.J. Watt on your team will do that for you. The next closest team in the league was Ipswich United with 402 points at defensive line. To put this into perspective, quarterback, the top scoring quarterback last year was Cam Newton. Dream. Well, I actually didn't report this yet. I've got the show kind of mocked up, but Cam Newton scored the sixth most points in league history at quarterback at 501 points. Crazy's defensive line put up 498. Man, it's like having a quarterback at the defensive line positions. Last but not least, D-Flex, where the league average was 1,330 points. Crazy again led the red division by scoring a league-high 1,650 points. The next closest teams were at 1,464, that's Show Me Your TDs, and 1,460, the Minotaurs. Defensive stats explain why Crazy has been so successful after finishing third or even last in most of the offensive categories. So that's how Crazy ended 2015 statistically. Crazy's roster today stands at 35 players. I have $13.19 in cap space available as far as off-season moves. This team, by the way, had won it spent three consecutive seasons, the franchise Crazy 7, with 10 wins or more, three consecutive Red Division titles, two trips to the Dog Bowl, both losses in 2013 and 2014. Last year, won the third place game. So it's been a competitive team, and this is what it's, excuse me while it's uncomfortable to bounce between talking about my team and myself and getting the narration right, but guys, for my team, what I did in the offseason was I re-signed Kurt Cousins to a three-year deal at $613 a year and then shipped him over to Stone Farm Pallies as part of a sign-and-trade. I did sign Julius Thomas from Jacksonville, three-year deal, $1.59 a year for a very good tight end. I re-signed Graham Gano 3 years at $2.02 a year, ended up signing him over or trading him over to Ipswich United. Myers, the kicker from Jacksonville, 3 year deal, $1.35 a year. That was a sign and trade to the Minotaurs. Ndamukong Suh, 3 year deal, $4.80, sign and trade to Stone Farm Pallies. Henry, I think it's Henry Anderson, defensive line from Indianapolis, 3 year deal, $0.55 a year. That's a signing. Cameron Wake, 3 year deal, $0.55, sign and trade to Klingons around Uranus. Malcolm Smith of Oakland. This was a tough deal for me. 3 years, $6.89 a year for the Oakland linebacker, formerly in Seattle. I didn't trade him. I kept him. Defensive back Corey Graham of Buffalo, 2 year deal, $4.53 a year on Corey Graham. There was an early signing executed by my franchise. Julian Edelman signed to a three-year deal, $4.40 a year. There were two taxi promotions. Antonio Brown of Baltimore, the linebacker. Excuse me, it's not Antonio Brown. I wish it was. Anybody want to help me out? I think I blocked this out due to the horrible trade that I made to get him. What is it?
Arthur Brown.
Arthur Brown. Thank you very much. Yes, Arthur Brown. So Arthur Brown was a taxi player that was promoted, signed to a 3-year deal at 50 cents, and then traded to the Marauding Minotaurs. Robert Griffin III, taxi promotion, 3-year, 50 cents, didn't trade him, actually have him on my team. So those were the signings that I did this offseason. The cuts now, cut Johnny Manziel, cut Bolden, the running back for New England, cut Hightower, running back New Orleans, Thompson, backup running back in Denver, was cut, Amendola was cut, Huff, wide receiver from Philadelphia, was cut. At linebacker, Anderson, a linebacker, I'm not sure if he's still with Chicago, he was last year, and Anderson, a linebacker with New Orleans, both of them cut. And last but not least, Michael Griffin, the defensive back, who I think is with Minnesota, used to be with Tennessee. He was also cut by Crazy Seven. Looking at what do we cover next here? We're going to recap the draft. Crazy Seven made a whole bunch of draft trades this year. Ended up with 5 draft picks. 1 second rounder, 3 third rounders, and 1 fifth rounder. They used their second round pick, the last pick of the second round, on Hunter Henry, tight end, San Diego. Then had the second and third and sixth picks in the third round. Chose to spend all those on running backs. C.J. Procise, Seattle. Keith Marshall, Washington. Jonathan Williams of Buffalo. Fifth round, picked up a linebacker, Kentrell Brothers of Minnesota. Trades. Crazy made a league-high 7 trades this year, tied for a league-high. Let's just call it league-high. At worst, he's tied with somebody. But first trade was giving up Kirk Cousins, Ndamukong Suh, Cameron Jordan, very good defensive lineman from New Orleans, a 2016 first-round pick, 10th overall, and the 10th pick in the second round of the 2016 draft. Gave all that up to get Aaron Rodgers in a fifth-round pick, the first pick in the fifth round, 2016. That was a blockbuster move. Next trade was with the Marauding Minotaurs, gave up Myers, the kicker of Jacksonville, and Arthur Brown, picked up the fourth pick in the second round and a fourth pick in the fifth round from the Marauding Minotaurs. Next trade Crazy made, gave up Cameron Wake to Klingons around Uranus for a third-round pick in 2017. Next, they made a trade with Lost in the Sauce, draft positioning, you know, jockeying around, moving down in the draft, picked up a first-round pick from Lost in the Sauce in 2017 in that deal. Traded Graham Gano to Ipswich United for a third-round pick, second pick in the third round this year. Then did some more draft position trading down with Klingons around Uranus, and then traded down again with Lost in the Sauce. So that's everything for Crazy Seven. Before we get comments from the panel, as is tradition here, we will take comments from the owner of the team, which in this case is me. So allow me to share what my goals and philosophy was as I came into this season. I had felt a strong need to improve my quarterback position. I felt that, in my words, the way that I call it, that I'm still in my championship window. I failed to mention that I lost Marshawn Lynch this year. He retired, and that's just a player that's, you know, I don't have that player anymore. And I also have Jamaal Charles, who came off a couple of injuries. He's approaching 30. I've got Adrian Peterson, who's older. I do have a couple of young guys on my team, but my point is that I've got some aging offensive players that are carrying me. And I felt that this was my – I'm still in that championship window at least for one more year. And I felt the need to go and try to go after it. And as far as league average, I'm amongst the lowest – as far as percentage of my starting lineup coming from the quarterback position, I'm only getting 10.5%. Most everybody else is getting a lot more than that. So I felt I had Matthew Stafford since the startup auction in 2011. He just lost Calvin Johnson. I wasn't comfortable with Kirk Cousins to be my starter going forward. And I just felt like if I didn't solidify this position, I felt if I could get a guy like Rodgers, that it could possibly push me over the edge and help me win a title. So that's why I went for it, and I cashed in some of that defensive line depth to try to basically get this massive MVP style leader at the top of my offensive at top of the offense on my team. I felt everything else in my team was very strong, and my goal for the rest of the team was to simply lay seeds for future years so that, you know, when a guy like Peterson retires, I can, excuse me, you know, I already lost Lynch. I've got Gurley and Cooper that are moving up into the lineup. I wanted more young guys so that if I could try to hit on one of these guys, it would take the place of one of my aging veterans. And last but not least, I did follow a strategy this year where the strategy was to take running backs in the mid rounds to try to treat them like lottery tickets and try to get as many as you could. Catch the best pass rusher, or excuse me, pass receiver that you could early, and then go running backs in those middle rounds and treat them like lottery tickets. I explained some of that in the draft shows. I don't want to recap all of it. That, in a nutshell, is where I was at this offseason, trying to stay on top for at least one more year, trying to win that title that I covet and have not been able to do. So that's what I have to say, guys. I'd like to turn the show over to you, to my co-host now, to see what they think of these offseason moves. Tom, we're going to lead with you today. What did you think of my offseason? Wow. Speechless.
Can I go second?
Tell me it's because it was so good. Tell me you weren't like, God, what do I say to this guy? I'm on the line with him. I can't roast him. You gotta roast me like a corn at the state fair. Seriously, be like the New Berlin Lions Club and roast me like an ear of corn. Do you want Steve to go first?
Yeah, that'd be.
Okay, Steve, would you mind kicking this one off?
No, I'll go ahead. I thought I did a very typical Rick Gronkowski offseason. Got rid of what he thought he needed to get rid of, used some assets to gain some position in some drafts. Obviously, going for Aaron Rodgers was a big swing for the fences. Minimized his bad moves over the last couple of years, so real well. The only concern, like you said, is you put all your chips in the middle this year, and I just don't know how you're going to fare a couple of years down the road. We'll have to wait and see.
I'm looking at the squad, and I do like that you did position yourself to get a lot of picks for next year, earlier picks for next year. Like as you said, your offense is getting kind of older in the tooth, so did do a good job of trying to take those lottery tickets and hopefully cash in on one, maybe two of those guys on that running back situation. Again, you still have Yeldon. Who knows what that's going to turn into. The jury's still out. They did bring in Ivory there. The draft overall was really decent. As in the last show when we talked before about how Stone Form made the trade in with you and the Aaron Rodgers deal. Liked his side of it, but I did like it on yours because you did unload a few guys that were kind of getting up there and the contracts are coming up due, and you wanted to get your, like you said, a cog for your starting lineup that you wouldn't have to worry about, you know, week in and week out. You just plug them in and never have to worry about them except for his bye week at the quarterback spot. So swing for it, man.
Well, thanks for reminding me of that swing for the fences, guys, because that is what I did, and that is what I kind of do many times, almost to the detriment at times. It's sometimes it's a weakness. It doesn't always work. When you swing for the fences, you strike out a lot. In my case, I've tried. I made a big trade for Robert Griffin, RG3, Robert Griffin III, you know, before he completely disintegrated. And I ended up putting him on my taxi squad and promoting him back up. He's on my team again. But that's an example of how I've been trying to find this next quarterback that could be my starter. And Stafford, the last, you know, year or two, just hasn't really had it. I tried Phil Rivers. I actually gave Phil Rivers the largest contract tied with Aaron Rodgers at the time at the startup draft, $12.50. It didn't turn out for me. I had to end up trading him. I mean, I've had Ben Roethlisberger, ended up moving him. I just, nothing was working, and that's why I felt I really felt that if I could get Aaron Rodgers, this might be the one. I think this is going to be a good season for the Packers as far as their schedule goes, playing the AFC South. I thought, man, this could be the one that puts me over. So that's the heart of my entire offseason, was to cash in some of that defensive line depth. I did feel that Brandon Graham was going to flip over to defensive line, and he did. I felt that I had the depth that I could take the hit of letting go of two starting caliber defensive linemen, and that everything else was strong enough that I might be able to do that. But let's cover offensive flex.
There's one thing I would have possibly maybe looked at ultimately. I know you guys did this trade earlier, you and Steve, with the Aaron Rodgers one. But I may have looked, I don't know how your feelings were with the guys of like Russell Wilson or future Jameis Winston type guys, something of that nature. Wondering if those would have been a kind of a scenario if you would have traded the same similar trade you did with Steve, maybe with like a Scott.
I tried, believe it or not. This is kind of, some of you know this individually, but as far as league-wide, this is the first time this is going to come out. I was trying like hell to trade for Russell Wilson. That was the first guy that was my target, because it was my opinion that Scott didn't like him as much as I think Wilson should be liked. Let's say it that way. I would have loved to have picked up Russell Wilson, and I was pitching ideas and offers over to Scott, and Scott seemingly wanted to wait at one point, just kind of even saying, I want to wait until after the draft. I want to see what, you know, Detroit does, and one of the players being dangled in the trade was Stafford, and I had sent out some feelers over to Steve's way, and when that deal started to materialize, I did go back and talk to Scott, and he was still on the fence and wanting to wait until the rookie draft is over. And I'm like, screw this, I can't wait. I mean, when you have a chance to make a trade for an impact player like this, you do it. I couldn't risk walking away with nothing. So that's why I know I gave up a lot, but I pulled the trigger on it. But Wilson was my first target. He really was. Over to offensive flex. I have a very solid core. I did lose some players. You know, I lost Marshawn Lynch, as I mentioned. On offensive flex, last year really laid the groundwork for the future of my offensive flex when I was fortunate enough, you can call it just dumb luck, to pick up Gurley and Cooper in that draft. I know I've got an aging Adrian Peterson. I purposely traded for him last year in an effort to try to get that title that is eluding me. Couldn't have predicted Jamal Charles would get injured and be out for the year. Having Jamal Charles come back from that injury, I think, is an upgrade on offense. But I lost Lynch, so it's a downgrade. It's losing Martavius Bryant to suspension is another big hit to this team. So you can argue that I took a small step backwards as far as my lineup this coming season, but picking up all the youth that I picked up in the draft. In fact, I had seen a note come through just tonight that Matt Jones was injured, so that really raises my interest about Keith Marshall and whether or not he's going to get an opportunity. But long-term, I think I improved at offensive flex. Short-term, how do you replace a guy like Lynch? And then Bryant goes out for the year with a suspension. Tom, would you like to comment on the O-Flex?
Yeah, like we said, got a couple aging guys. Was able to pick up Gurley last year, which is with some money pick. Got Yeldon as well. Like I said, he's going to probably get his shot at it again probably in 2 years, unless there's an injury to Ivory this year. But I think they're going to readdress that and see if he's ready to take on the full role of it, like I said, within 2 years. The biggest hit for me I saw was, Bryant getting popped for that one-year suspension. That really hurt. Him, Cooper, and then you sprinkle in Edelman when he's in there 100% with Brady. That's a sick trio on just in the receiving core, but you got all these guys at the running back position that you don't even need to use all three of them, so I like the pickup of Hunter Henry. It's another guy that's probably going to be able to pop for you next year 100% unless Gates does his normal plantar fasciitis and is out mid-season and his could escalate up there quicker. So, like I said, I like the lottery picks with the running backs that you got. Like you said before, the only other guy I would have heard possibly is probably, I don't know, maybe down the road or in the free agent draft, you know, our guy AC over there in Seattle might be a guy to look at.
Yes, sir. Steve, would you like to comment on the offensive flex?
To no fault of your own, you took some steps back, but you were able to pick up Amari Cooper and, like you said, Amari Cooper and Gurley, who are now maturing into their second year and doing well. So I'd say you kind of maybe even killed maybe a little bit, maybe a little water coming over the side, but nothing bad. I think it's as solid as it was last year.
Yeah, just some, you know, every year there seems to be, and I'm not whining, I'm just saying every year I seem to have some kind of struggle on offense, unexpected injury or something that happens that just kind of bites me and I end up playing with one arm behind my back on offense. I think an example this year of something kind of biting me was I do the early signing on Edelman and then it's reported that he has surgery on his foot and he's, you know, out leading into camp. You know, he's finally off the PUP list now, but that's the kind of thing where it's like I'm thinking, oh, good, I'll cement in Julian Edelman and lock him in at a solid contract. And next thing you know, Brady, the whole suspension thing comes back. It's overturned. He's suspended. Edelman's got surgery, and I'm standing there with my thumb up my ass going, what the hell just happened? But moving over to tight end position, Tom mentioned Hunter Henry. That was the big addition to this crew. Last year, Clive Walford was added, so there's youth been injected to this spot in what I always thought was a pretty good tight end crew. I was really surprised to see that I finished below average at this position. So I still like the players on you know, this crew. I didn't set out to draft Hunter Henry. I just felt he was the best available player, and he gives me a lot of flexibility as the future goes forward. But Clive Walford was a guy that I went out of my way to pick up for the future, was impressed with him in college. I just think it's a solid crew, and I could end up starting maybe even every single one of these guys throughout the year. Tom, care to comment more on the tight end position?
Yeah, I think the only problem that came into effect here was, you know, each guy got hurt. You know, each guy missed time last year, so that's where the downfall came, where you didn't get your consistent points out of that position, which kind of sucks because you did have, you know, some guys that you've seen projected in, you know, a couple guys in the top 10, possibly top 15, with a
Steve?
Highly touted out of college. So,
well, I don't want to be Mr. Doom and Gloom, but I think you kept the two solid guys in Travis Kelce and Julius Thomas, and the ability to pick up Hunter. That definitely makes it so that not only don't you have to worry about your tight end position, but you might, as we alluded to earlier, you might be able to use one of those three guys in a piece. Clive Walford worries me, though. He's not having a very good preseason or a camp, and he still can't put Lee Smith and Michael Rivera on the bench. So, for me, the jury's still out on Clive Walford. I don't know if his college success and stats are translating to the NFL very well.
Yeah, it's sometimes tight ends take a little while to bloom, which is why I'm very happy to have Kelce and Thomas ahead of those guys. So no disagreements there. At place kicker, I do want to state that I took a step down. Zuerlein has not done well for me, and I had Gano, but I traded him to get a draft pick. I had been riding the Atlanta kicking job, which was very good for a long time, and they struggled a lot on offense last year, and I wasn't sure. There's a place kicker battle going on down there. So I did take a step back, and I wanted to recognize that. Moving over to the defensive line position, you guys can feel free to comment on kicker if you want. Just yell out if you do. But defensive line with such a strong D-line. This is where my team made the most dramatic moves this offseason, cashing in with the big trade, really trades, because I traded off three defensive linemen during this offseason, Cameron Wake for the third rounder next year, and then Cameron Jordan, or is it Jordan Cameron? I always get mixed up by that. And Ndamukong Suh. My overall philosophy and strategy on that was the fact that I had the depth. Because not only did I have those guys, my starters since the startup draft, I auctioned J.J. Watt and I auctioned Jordan, which I'm going to actually look up the proper. It's Cameron
yes.
Jordan. I was correct. So I had Jordan and Watt in the startup auction, and they've been in my lineup ever since. You're talking about five-year starters. But I also love Vinnie Curry in the back. I love these young defensive linemen that I've picked up, waiting on Brandon Graham to get the opportunity, which he now is going to have in a 4-3 to be a defensive end. Henry Anderson last year, a guy who I picked on my taxi squad, and he blew up before blowing out his knee. Adigaziwa from the Giants. I just felt like I had the depth to let go of Cameron Wake, to let go of Jordan, to let go of Sue, that you got to give something to get something, and that's where I took that capital from. So I feel I can get that number two starter out of this mix. I don't like the injury news about J.J. Watt. That's very scary for me, and that could really bring me back to reality real quick if J.J. Watt can't have a J.J. Watt-style year. That could potentially doom my, you know, maybe that just kind of rubs out the Aaron Rodgers effect and puts me right back to battling with everybody else neck and neck. Thoughts on the defensive line, Tom?
You got the position that's highly coveted to have. It's the defensive end. Everybody should strive to have these guys on their team. These are the guys that are going to put up the points. Get very seldom a few guys on defensive tackle that do it. But you've got guys on teams that are known for their blitz packages, their 4-3 defenses, and with Brandon Graham being, you know, issued a new position at defensive end, that gives it time and a sign for him to possibly escalate, especially with Curry there and with Fletcher Cox there, you know, and the young guy there in New York. I see that as a great situation for him to learn under Vernon and JPP. I think that giving him one full year healthy wise to play up against underneath those guys, I think is only going to make him even better. And Anderson was about to go off, but like you said, he had a blowout. So
he blew it out while he was blowing up. Steve, defensive line.
Well, obviously from the look of it or the onset of it, you've obviously taken a step back because I mean, obviously getting rid of those three guys. Those guys you have left aren't going to make up for that. But you have the luxury of having J.J. Watt, so if he comes back healthy, he's like starting two guys in one. And the other guys, Anderson probably will do okay, and Graham should do okay. Curry's a good guy to have in there for backups and stuff. So you had the luxury, like you said, of being able to get rid of those top-tier guys to bring in other pieces like Aaron Rodgers. So while it is a step back on paper, it definitely helped to move your entire team forward.
And even though it's my team, while what I say right now is in complete objectivity, not biased at all, when you have three guys on your team that could start on other teams in the league, and you feel that there's another guy or two that you could fill your number two defensive line spot with, when you're that damn deep at defensive line, trade some of it and make something out of it, right? I mean, do something for your team. Don't just let all these starters sit on your bench. So,
what I mean. I mean, it looks as though you took a step back because obviously losing those or getting rid of those three guys, those four guys left on the bench aren't those three guys, but you were able to turn that into other pieces that you needed to put into your existing lineup and in the next year's draft. So Yes, it's one step back, two steps forward.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on the point. I was just emphasizing, if this wasn't my team, that's what I would be emphasizing right now, was how, you know, that was the smart move to move that talent around. You always have to be conscious of what's on your rosters and what maybe is worth more to you on someone else's roster. But I'll be rooting for your guys, even though I traded them to you, Steve. I'll be rooting for them. They're still mine at heart. Defensive flex is next.
Unless I play you.
What's that?
Unless I play you, or on the week if I play you, then you're not rooting for him anymore.
I'll still root for him. I'll just root for the rest of your team to die. at defensive flex, I did set out, I'll be honest, I set out to pick up one or two players, one of which would be a starter caliber, you know, could be a 2016 depth kind of player in the draft. And I was floored. I was shocked. That's one of the reasons why I kept trading down during the draft, was because I was shocked at the run, the unprecedented run on defensive players, starting with Tom scooping Joseph away from me right off the bat with the last 11th or 12th pick in the first round, and just continuing on through the picks that Tim made. And I didn't get that player I wanted. Instead, I got the second player I wanted, which was a young linebacker to groom for the future. But I did get scooped during the draft. I did not get the improvement that I sought at defensive flex. I've always, every year, tried to collect pieces, and I think it showed in my stats, having one of the highest scoring defensive flexes in our five-year history. So, Tom, what do you think of the defensive flex situation?
I think you got a chance to even possibly throw up a few more extra points. Alec Ogletree is going into a new role as being the guy commanding the center of that defensive linebacker core there in the Rams. So you can see a major jump. Plus, I do believe he got a little last year, so you can easily add another 100-plus points to that guy's stats. I don't know about... rookie season out of Landon Collins. Came, you know, some guy I was looking at myself, and I ended up taking David Johnson instead. But so either way, it was a pick your poison for me at that point. But you got him, solid kid. Tyron Matthew, what it's going to be when he comes back from the injury, but he got paid. He should do well. You got Chad Jones, guy, only consistent year in, year out on that guy. So. What can you say? All these safeties and the linebackers, you can't get enough of them.
It's unbelievable that there's actually eight. I didn't even know it until right now when I counted. There's eight players on this defensive flex, nine if you count J.J. Watt, that scored 200 or more points last year, two scored 300 and up. And a 10th player, Alec Ogletree's injuries cut his season short, or he certainly, based on past history, would have been another player at the 200 mark. So there's a lot of really good depth there. Steve, do you have comments on defensive flex?
Well, here's an interesting little fact for you. In the 2011 inaugural draft, Crazy Seven had 10 linebackers and two defensive backs. Obviously, since then, there's been a paradigm shift. Now that I think you're running like five and six, you actually have fewer linebackers than defensive backs. So I think it shows something that you've been able to recognize that there are defensive backs that can put up points. The only thing that concerns me is obviously I don't know that Rashad Jones and Corey Graham are going to be able to put up the numbers they put up last year. And, you know, Jelani Jenkins, he's nothing special. And Ogletree, he's old and he's hurt. So I hope he makes a good comeback. I'm a big fan of his.
Did you say he's old?
Well, he's getting old, yeah.
He's only been in the league. This is his fourth year. He's 24.
Well, yeah, but in linebacker years, I think that, well, I should say, let me reiterate that he's got a lot of wear and tear on him. He's been the center of that with Laurinaitis for forever, and he just seems to be getting hurt, missing a few games. Now, last year he took out, I mean, he took a better part of the season off, but the year before that I think he missed a couple games. So I just hope he can stay healthy.
I'm pulling my white glove off and I'm slapping you across the face.
Yeah, that was the wrong.
You have a defensive tackle on your team.
You don't even know how many times I've had to pull Ogletree off of this guy, and you throw out that he's an old man. Are you kidding, Rick? Rick, that means he's available, right, Rick? Because he's old. I'll take him.
I didn't mean that. The wrong phrasing. He's got a lot of wear.
Maybe Steve's trying to set me up to trade him by telling me he's old, so then I'll look at him and think he's old.
This might be
he is old now.
Tales of the Stone Form to pull some magic LARPing move on you right now.
That's
well,
fantastic.
I got
Jedi moves.
I got Robinson off of him. I got Robinson off of him. No, I just meant that was wrong. I totally brain farted there. He's just got a lot of wear.
That's okay. That's
you can fart all you want, buddy. You're amongst family and friends. Loved ones here. You can fart anywhere you got to.
He was doing the Jedi move. Alex Ogletree. You want to trade him to me. Well,
you
guys, let's dive right into the – we got about 3 to 3.5 to 4 minutes left. Let's fire through potential starting lineups, me obviously going first. I think I'll start that Aaron Rodgers guy since I traded like 70 pieces for him. Jamal Charles, Todd Gurley, Peterson, and Cooper are the ideal offensive lineup. Going to have Edelman right behind, you know, ready to go in as needed. At tight end, it'll be Kelce and Thomas playing matchups between the two. I've heard Thomas is having a great camp, so he might be the early favorite, but Kelce has always been the guy I prefer to start. Kicker, I might pick up a kicker. Don't have a ton of great confidence in Greg Zuerlein, but defensive line, J.J. Watt and Brandon Graham will get the first shot, but I'm big on Vinny Curry. I like these other guys too, but if Curry starts to outplay Graham, he'll find his way in. At D-flex, the positions are going to be Alec Ogletree, Malcolm Smith, Bobby Wagner, Landon Collins, Rashad Jones, and Teron Mathieu. And I am looking forward to see what happens with Jenkins. If he starts putting stats up in Miami, he could easily find his way in at times. Room for matchups. So if you guys were me, starting with you, Tom, what would you start?
Everything was pretty much the same. If Jenkins does start to heat up, I would move him as fast as I could get him off my team.
Steve?
The only thing I'd change, I would probably make Kelce my starter and look for the matchup with Thomas. Just Kelce just proves game in and game out that he's a solid point getter for you. So I have a little bit more love for him than you do.
And I didn't say it during the O-Flex, but I like the tight end position so much there that I'm not afraid to toss those guys into O-Flex as needed, you know, for injuries, bye weeks, matchups. But we have about a minute and a half left. Can this team compete for the Red Division? I think it's in its title window still, potential championship window still. Anybody disagree?
No, I see it as a couple of years in the title contention.
Agreed.
All right, on a 5-point scale, let's hit it. Tom, what do you give Crazy Seven's off-season moves?
3.75 to a 4.0.
Steve, Crazy's off-season.
Yeah, I give him a 4. I mean, he definitely put a lot of, like I said, he put his chips into the center. Let's hope it pays off.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a, you know, like a 4, 3.5 to 4. So like Tom said, 3.75. So I'll lay it down on a 4. No, I'm going to go 3.5. Can I go 3.75? Anyway, 10 seconds left. Guys, well, that's all she wrote. That's all we wrote. Seriously, that's all that's on the script, and it's a good thing because we're out of time. I'd like everybody to just come on now. Let me hit the timer here. It's time for everybody to relax, okay? Stay tuned for this 2016 off-season moves. Yep, team-by-team breakdown series to continue. Next show is going to be on the Marauding Minotaurs. We're going to dig into them, so all you defensive line fans out there, don't miss it. Until then, thank you, Tom Buckles. Thank you, Steve Wellman, for joining me tonight. Thank everybody for listening. It's been another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. We'll be right back.